A room in a hotel in Mexico City. In the room was an ugly modern bureau with a lavender-tinted mirror, and tucked into a corner of the mirror was a printed warning from the management. Su día termina a las 2 p.m. Your day ends at 2 p.m. Guests, in other words, must vacate the room by the stated hour or expect to be charged another day's rent. A luxury that the present occupants were not contemplating. They wondered only whether they could settle the sum already owed. For everything had evolved as Perry had prophesied. Dick had sold the car, and 3 days later the money, slightly less than $200, had largely vanished. On the fourth day, Dick had gone out hunting honest work, and that night he had announced to Perry, "Nuts! You know what they pay? What the wages are? For an expert mechanic? $2 a day. Mexico. Honey, I've had it. We got to make it out of here. Back to the States. No, now I'm not going to listen. Diamonds. Buried treasure. Wake up, little boy. There ain't no caskets of gold. No sunken ship. And even if there was, hell, you can't even swim." And the next day, having borrowed money from the richer of his two fiancées, the banker's widow, Dick bought bus tickets that would take them, via San Diego, as far as Barstow, California. "After that," he said, "we walk." Of course, Perry could have struck out on his own, stayed in Mexico, let Dick go where he damn well wanted. Why not? Hadn't he always been a loner, and without any real friends? Except the gray-haired, gray-eyed, and brilliant Willie J. But he was afraid to leave Dick. Merely to consider it made him feel sort of sick, as though he were trying to make up his mind to jump off a train going 99 miles an hour. The basis of his fear, or so he himself seemed to believe, was a newly grown superstitious certainty that whatever had to happen won't happen, as long as he and Dick stick together. Then, too, the severity of Dick's wake-up speech, the belligerence with which he'd proclaimed his theretofore concealed opinion of Perry's dreams and hopes, all this, perversity being what it is, appealed to Perry. Hurt and shocked him, but charmed him, almost revived his former faith in the tough, the totally masculine, the pragmatic, the decisive Dick he'd once allowed to boss him. And so, since a sunrise hour on a chilly Mexico City morning in early December, Perry had been prowling about the unheated hotel room, assembling and packing his possessions. Stealthily, lest he waken the two sleeping shapes lying on one of the room's twin beds, Dick and the younger of his betrothed's, Inez. There was one belonging of his that need no longer concern him. On their last night in Acapulco, a thief had stolen the Gibson guitar, absconded with it from a waterfront cafe where he, Otto, Dick, and the cowboy had been bidding one another a highly alcoholic goodbye. And Perry was bitter about it. He felt, he later said, real mean and low, explaining, "You have a guitar long enough, like I had that one. Wax and shine it. Fit your voice to it. Treat it like it was a girl you really had some use for. Well, it gets to be kind of holy." But while the purloined guitar presented no ownership problem, his remaining property did. As he and Dick would now be traveling by foot or thumb, they clearly could not carry with them more than a few shirts and socks. The rest of their clothing would have to be shipped, and indeed, Perry had already filled the cardboard carton, putting into it, along with some bits of unlaundered laundry, two pairs of boots, one pair with soles that left a cat's paw print, the other pair with diamond pattern soles, and addressed it to himself, care of General Delivery, Las Vegas, Nevada. But the big question and source of heartache was what to do with his much-loved memorabilia. The two huge boxes heavy with books and maps, yellowing letters, song lyrics, poems, and unusual souvenirs, suspenders and a belt fabricated from the skins of Nevada rattlers he himself had slain, an erotic netsuke bought in Kyoto, A petrified dwarf tree, also from Japan, the foot of an Alaskan bear.